Sunday, December 18th, 2011. This is the Bears Blog Weekend Show. I'm your host, Jeff Hughes. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to have Nathan Whitaker, the co-author of Tim Tebow's Through My Eyes, to discuss Tebow and his impact on the NFL and his impact culturally. And we're going to have Cam Worrell on again to talk about James Harrison, Colt McCoy, the Bears, a whole range of things. Cam's been a valued member of this show, and we really do appreciate him. If you can hear it in my voice, you'll notice that I have no enthusiasm for this show this week. None. And all week, I've been debating whether to even do it. I'm having a hard time, as a fan, reconciling what's taken place here in the 2011 season. And it all started with Johnny Knox falling down and Jay Cutler making a tackle. And since that moment, this team has just gone into the tank. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They are no longer an offense that can move the ball 10 yards. And I had such high expectations at 7-3. I believe so strongly that this was a team that could compete for a title. I recognized clearly the Packers were the class of the league. But I was relishing the thought and relishing the opportunity for this team to go into Lambeau in the playoffs and take a swing at them. I understood they'd be significant underdogs, at least a touchdown in that game. And I understood they probably wouldn't win that game. But I was relishing the chance to go up there and knock them out. Because I think we were developing the kind of team. We had a better run game than them. We're playing better defense than them. Our quarterback was playing spectacularly. I said, we now have the formula to go up there, especially in conditions, and win. And look at where we're now. And I'm seeing it now because what you're seeing now on this site, in the Twitter world, you are seeing all these fans play the blame game. And I just think people are putting the blame in the wrong positions. People are blaming Lovie Smith. People are blaming Jerry Angelo. I blame players. I blame Marion Barber. We're all wrong. The truth of the matter is, if Jay Cutler is the quarterback of the Chicago Bears these last 3 weeks, they win all three games. And it's not close. They win all three games. We just got bit. Sometimes your team gets the hard luck. In the NFL, if you lose your quarterback, that is the hard luck. And we are an offense now designed around the abilities of our quarterback. And when you lose those special abilities, you can no longer play the offense you want to play. And then to lose Forte, and listen, the Marion Barber game. Matt Forte's not making those mistakes. Matt Forte's not running out of bounds. He's not fumbling in overtime. He's not doing it. That's what comes from playing backups in big spots. You're going to have mistakes. There's a reason Marion Barber is not a starting running back right now in the NFL. There's a reason the Cowboys were more than willing to let him walk out the door. He's not a great player. And when you put a not great player in a big spot, they usually show you why they're not great. And Marion Barber showed us. Roy Williams continues to show us. He showed us against Kansas City. That's for damn sure. We have a championship caliber defense and a championship caliber special teams, and we don't have an offense now because we lost number 6. It's as simple as that. We can all sit around and try to force blame into areas that doesn't belong and argue and refute each other all we want. The truth of the matter is this team needs their quarterback, and they don't have him. And maybe they'll get lucky tonight. I'm recording this before Atlanta, Jacksonville. Maybe Maurice Jones-Drew will run over Atlanta and give the Bears hope again Sunday that if they beat the Seahawks, they're back in the mix. Some people have said they don't want it. I want it. I'll tell you that much. I need it because this last 4 days has been awful. It's been a tough time, but sometimes you have to sit back and say, hey, this wasn't our year. Maybe it'll be next year. Maybe the luck will jump our way next year. All right, we'll be back with Nathan Whitaker in a few seconds, but right now I'm going to play a song by the Alan Greshick Orchestra. The Alan Greshick Orchestra performs every Thursday night at the Green Mill Lounge in Chicago. They are one of the great shows. They do a 1937 radio broadcast, swing music, big band. They even incorporate the commercials of the 37 radio broadcast. It's just about the most entertaining thing you can do on Thursday night in Chicago. Here is the Alan Greshick Orchestra. Their rendition of A Tisket, A Tasket. We'll be right back with Nathan Whitaker.
dropped it. Yes, on the way I dropped it. A little girlie picked it up and she put it in her pocket. She was trucking on down the avenue with ne'er a single thing to do. Peck, peck, pecking all around. When she spied it on the ground, she took it, she took it. She took my yellow basket. And if that girlie don't return it, I think that I will die.
Nathan Whitaker. Nathan is the co-author of Tim Tebow's, I guess it would be an autobiography, Through My Eyes, which, congratulations to Nathan, is back on the New York Times bestsellers list. So Nathan's family will have a nicer Christmas than they maybe even expected. And
that's right.
Nathan, thanks for coming on board.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
I think because this is sort of a foreign topic to Bears fans, can you sort of tell us the story of how you came to get to know Tebow and how you became the guy he wrote the book with?
Well, sure. It started when I had done several books with Tony Dungy. And I used to work for the Buccaneers, so I was in the front office with Tony and Jerry Angelo and Tim Ruskell, those last couple, of course, being with the Bears now. Got to know Tony and wrote a couple of books. But I'm from Gainesville, Florida, originally. And so and my dad had coached baseball at Florida. And so through some of those connections, the Tebows connected with me when they thought it was time to kind of set the record straight with all the ink that had been spilled about Tim and give him a chance to tell his side of the story.
First of all, it's great that you have a little bit of insight into Jerry and Tim. Maybe we'll get into that in a second. Here's where the Tebow – I think the Tebow professional career so far has been absolutely fascinating. And I've never seen a player in professional football that it seems people have to make a decision on, whether they like him or they don't. And I'm wondering, is that religious-based, or is this guy just polarizing in the sense that he's not your normal quarterback?
You know, I think there is an interplay between the two. I think a lot of it's just the latter, that he just doesn't look like what we typically think of as a quarterback now. And the one thing I've been not that anybody cares my opinion from a football standpoint. They didn't when I used to work for the Bucks either, but that's another matter. But what I've always preached patience, that we just don't evaluate. We didn't evaluate Aaron Rodgers when he didn't start for his first two or three years in the league. And we didn't evaluate Steve McNair when he had a chance to sit early on in his career. And I think those were very healthy for those guys, and had hoped Tim would be able to do the same. And instead, well, from day one, it's turned into, can he make it or not? Which has been tough.
And I agree with you. And I always said I thought the detriment done to Tim Tebow was being drafted where he was drafted in the manner he was drafted. Because I've always said I think Tim Tebow coming out of college was probably a second or third round quarterback. Now, maybe he's a first round guy, and I think that's clearly what he is. But he's a second. So now there is an expectation placed on him almost a bit too early. But to his credit, he's done so well with that. What is Tim Tebow? I'm sure you had to deal with him day after day. What's he like as a day-to-day person, not as a quarterback?
He's totally, totally likable and fun to be around. I've told people, even if you think you don't like him, or even if you're tired of the media coverage or whatever, you would totally love being around him for 20 minutes or 2 hours or whatever. Just a totally fun, laid-back kind of guy when he's not totally involved in something. Now, when he is go, it's full go. Whether we were having a break from writing the book to do a wiffle ball home run derby, or whatever it might be, and you know, it's funny. We tried to squeeze in book writing, but there were a lot of times when he was either working out at the complex or he'd come home. He asked me about P90X. I said I was doing P90X, and he asked me about it, and I said, gave him my opinion. He said, yeah, I'm looking for a program to do like when I'm done with the workouts at the complex, you know, the 4 hours that I work out there. I'm looking for something to do in the evenings. And of course, I can barely survive an hour of P90X without doing anything else for the rest of the month. But anyway, Tim's just totally driven, totally focused. But when he's not totally locked in, very fun and engaging to be around.
When doing the research on you, I what I liked about having you on was not just the sort of element of having worked with my book. You're also a religious man. I can tell by your site. And I'm fascinated by the way Tim is being received right now by the evangelical community, by the sort of Christian community, specifically in Florida and down the South. Is he right now, is he something of a religious icon, even if you want to sort of be wary of that phrase? Is he symbolically a religious icon right now?
You know, it feels that way for a lot of folks. And the one thing that, you know, Tim and I talked about this, that he certainly has been blessed and he's made the most of those opportunities and he works very hard. He's really intentional about being a role model and trying to make good decisions. You know, every little decision we make, he tries to think through it and make sure those are good ones. And I think he does a nice job at that. But people have then taken that and really had him carrying the banner for whatever it is they want to project faith-wise out there. And I'm not sure that's necessarily his role or any, you know, human's role. Don't think it's necessarily healthy for anybody to stick somebody else in that role. But that's what he's become, for better or worse. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. I don't think Tim is either.
Well, it's interesting because I was having this conversation recently, and this is just my – I'm not a religious person. I'm not necessarily someone who believes in God. And I always find that when people – if there is a God, and I'm open to the idea that there is, if there is a God and he really has a stake in an NFL football game, I think his priorities are out of whack. And so
right.
I think what people respond to is when every – and he's not the only player who does this, but he's at the highest profile. When every question about, hey, how did you complete that pass on 3rd and 10, when every answer is, well, I've got to thank the Lord our God, I think people go, there's no way he was involved in that 3rd and 10. And so I think – and I'll let you respond to this. Is it – and Kurt Warner has said it, and I know Jake Plummer, who's not exactly somebody anybody cares about – has said it. Do you think Tim has to scale back the amount he sort of talks about the religion, the amount he talks about faith, or is that just who he is and that's the way he's going to be?
Well, let me give you my answer in two parts. First, for the initial part of that, I would tend to agree with you that clearly I do believe in God and believe that that he's has a lot of different facets, but one of which is all powerful. So if he chose to have somebody complete a third down pass or have Matt Prater's kick continue to carry and be good from 59 yards, or it would have been good from like 70, yeah. It looked like. But then I think he could. Now, I'm with you. I don't think he's, you know, I don't think at some point he, you know, Lovie Smith, great God-fearing man, and I don't think God is looking at it going, you know, I think I like Tim a little better than Lovie did. Yes, it's very, very theologically dicey when we get there. Yeah. And the disservice that maybe Tim's shorthand answers give a little bit, but also in people's interpretation, the disservice they do to it is that, and this is where the second point ties in, when Tim chooses to make those statements pretty much at the start of every interview, people read the back half of the sentence in, which I don't think is there. And Tim is saying, look, I am giving thanks to God for my life itself. I'm giving thanks to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for eternal life. And boy, wasn't that a great game. And boy, wasn't that a... But I, in talking to Tim, I've never heard from him, I'm so grateful that God completed that pass, or that God let the receiver's hands hang on to it. Or Tim, as I have understood him, Tim has always just been acknowledging his place kind of in the universe, and that being a very teeny tiny cog that really doesn't matter for much in the overall scheme of God and what does matter. So that's where that comes from. Now, to Plummer's point and the statements Kurt Warner made, I am wired more like Kurt Warner, I think, where, you know, and you see it in their marriage, right? Brenda is the one who's more outspoken. Kurt is plenty outspoken, but chooses different spots to speak. And I think that's okay with that. You see that in a lot of different areas of life, where certain people are bold in certain situations, others of us are quieter. And that's just how I'm wired and how Tim's wired and Kurt. And I think it's okay for us all to be ourselves.
Well, you know, it's funny because I'm going to contradict myself, because there was a moment when Marion Barber ran out of bounds where I thought there only could be divine intervention. I could not actually physically understand a man doing what he did without being shoved by some kind of an angel. So I'll give Tim credit. If Tim had that going, then it's Tim one, Lovie none. So you work with the Bucks. How close was your contact with Jerry Angelo and Tim Ruskell during that time?
Very close. In fact, Jerry tried to hire me to the Bears, but the Bucks blocked my move. I still had a contract when he first came. And so I worked hand-in-hand with Jerry and Tim. We were all under Rich McKay working in the personnel department. I was doing cap work, contract negotiations, and the like, and they were doing the talent evaluation.
Give me a Jerry Angelo one-on-one, 101 from somebody who worked with him.
Jerry Angelo, very very old school in the way he evaluated players, and just a very solid talent evaluator. You know, speaking to the old school, Jerry coached at the University of Tampa back when they had football, and you'll appreciate this for Jerry's mindset, that they used to do drills where he would put the linemen with their backs to the Hillsborough River. And so if the D lineman could drive the offensive lineman back toward the quarterback, the offensive lineman fell into the river. So that was before Jerry got into personnel, he was doing that coaching. And Jerry's just very cut to the chase. He is, you know, we had Rich McKay, who was kind of more the Rich was a lawyer and was this kind of smooth-talking type, and Jerry was always the type to cut right to the chase. And I think you see that all the time. But the one thing they all did together well that I think Jerry and Tim do a good job of is that in order to fix the Bucks, they had to stop missing. And whether it was draft picks or free agents or whatever, they couldn't continue to miss with those picks. And that's been their MO, is to try to just be solid.
From what you've seen, is the, you know, and they've been together now for 8 years. Does the marriage of Jerry Angelo and Lovie Smith make sense to you as someone who's worked with Jerry and knows his mindset? Does that look like a team that could go on and continue to work together for a long time?
Well, I think so. And the challenge always comes when you don't win a Super Bowl. Right. And our mindset in Tampa that I think Jerry had always bought into, so I assume, and I haven't spoken to him directly about this since he's been in Chicago, but I assume Jerry's mindset was, we're always going to be good. We're going to have a plan and stick with it. And Lovey's patient. He's a patient kind of guy. Jerry's a patient kind of guy. And we're going to have a plan. And in the NFL, if you have a plan and stick to it, you're going to start out ahead of those four, five, or eight teams who every couple of years tear it up, fire the coach, fire the GM, whatever, and have to overhaul the roster. And occasionally you see somebody do that successfully and everybody looks at, hey, you know, it was only 1 year that they were 2-14 and now they're in the playoffs. But that's rare. And our philosophy in Tampa was if we can just kind of be good, stay ahead of the curve, we're going to make the playoffs every year. And one of these years the ball's going to bounce right for us in the playoffs and we're going to win it. And sure enough, that happened.
Sure did. And so let's wrap it up. I'll go one at you here on Tebow just to sort of finish it up. Is his success, and let's call it just a win-loss success, is one thing, but I think his biggest success this season has been just how inspired he's made the guys around him. You can tell on that sideline that they believe in him with the ball, and they are pumped up whenever he makes a play. Is his success this early in his career surprising to you?
Well, surprising the manner in which it's happened. I've read the stats about, you know, what he's done is like flipping a coin 17 times in a row and having it come up heads every time or something statistically crazy like that. So the manner of which, but you're absolutely right that he is, when you're around him and we're just, again, we're just writing a book and I'm around him and I'm thinking, you know what, I need to start getting up early in the morning. You know what, I could write a second book while we're working on this book. And you're just around him and you're thinking, there's so much more that I'm capable of just when he rubs off on you. And I think that is infectious when guys see that, hey, we're never out of this, that all we need to do is make a play or two. And when everybody starts looking at, well, where can I make that play? And I'll keep going a little harder, a little longer, and you see the results.
You know, there's no way to doubt it anymore, I think, from the standpoint. He may not be the most accurate passer, but that can come. He's young in the league. He's making an impact right now, and I think he's a great story for the NFL, especially in the wake of what we're seeing out of Sam Hurd today. Give me
right.
53 turbos, Tebows, instead of one Sam Hurd. Nathan Whitaker, thanks for joining us. We hope to talk to you down the line.
Great. Thank you, Jeff.
Yep.
And we went a little long there with Nathan Whitaker, but I thought we got some great stuff. So we will bump Cam Worrell to next week. Cam's always available for us, and we thank him for that. Also, thanks to Nathan for doing the spot. And here comes the Reverend's rant.
2 hours ago, I recorded an incredibly dispirited piece for this week's rant. The loss last week just gutted me to the point where I couldn't muster up the emotion to even get angry and yell. Frankly, most of this week, I've felt kind of like I've been one of those people on antidepressants who can't really feel highs or lows anymore. But then Sam Hurd managed to fix that up with about 5 to 10 kilos of pick-me-upper. Holy fucking shit, are you kidding me? 5 to 10 kilos of cocaine a week? 10? 10 keys, man! And he reportedly told the undercover guy he needed this because the 4 keys he was currently moving weren't enough. Think about that. 4 kilos of cocaine was not enough for a 7-day period. Sam Hurd, the cocaine king of Chicago. He has 8 catches on the year. He has 8, let me say that again. He has 8 balls on the season. The poeticism of that is just beautiful. But it also means that the man we thought was supposed to be Rashid Davis, too, has sold as many kilos of nose candy every 2 weeks as he's caught balls all season. My heart fucking exploded just thinking about that. Fuck the analysts who have slammed our wide receiver core. We have fucking Scarface as our 5th receiver. I hope to God the 8 balls he was selling were stamped with the Bears logo. Can you imagine? Licensed NFL cocaine? Shit, I'd buy that and my nose is an out hole. Why did it have to happen now? I could have got all my stocking stuffers. Actually, no, I couldn't have because the 4 kilos he's currently been selling weren't enough to meet his needs. I mean, I'm all for athletes planning for their post-playing days careers, but fuck. Buy a Five Guys or something. Don't start a Yayo franchise. And we haven't even mentioned the 1,000 pounds of pot a week that were thrown into this deal. No wonder he didn't get many offensive snaps. Between special teams and slinging, he's got to be pretty goddamn busy. How'd he even find the time to set this up? I don't listen to the press conference introducing him to the Bears, but I assume he didn't say, well, I'm just excited to get my hands on the playbook and find a distribution network. This is fucking mind-blowing. I can't even find words. It's changed the whole final quarter of the Bears' season for me. The Chiefs, the Broncos, the Seahawks? Fuck them. Who cares? How can you care about losing when you're higher than Nick Nolte? My God, 5 to 10 kilos of blow a week. You could paint the goddamn lines on Soldier Field with that. And you could celebrate first downs by blowing a rail right off the field. That sure should be better than Roy Williams' first down move. Speaking of, do you realize in the last 10 days, we've seen Roy Williams cost us the tying score, Marion Barber cost us a game, and now Sam Hurd get busted trying to be the Pablo Escobar of Lakeshore Drive? I want us to sign more ex-Cowboys. Right now, I have to see what they're capable of. 10 keys! We are going to get to 10 wins, but 10 fucking keys a week! Hot damn, but I am fucking pumped up about the rest of the Bears season again. Woo!
That's the show for this week. Good luck to the Bears this week. If you're watching the game and you're enjoying the game, do not drink and drive. Good luck to Sam Hurd. I think he can probably turn in his compatriot and get the sentence reduced to 20 years. Otherwise, he's going away for a long, long time. But I bet you can get it knocked down to 15 to 20. Something like that. What did Ray Carruth get? He killed a guy, right? Sam Hurd is the new Ray Carruth. All right, we'll send you off with one more of Alan Gresick's great little swing numbers. Remember, the Alan Gresick Orchestra every Thursday night at the Green Mill Lounge in Chicago, Illinois.